Crime and Crime Again is a true crime podcast containing subject matter that may be graphic or disturbing. Listener discretion is advised. This episode discusses topics that may be triggering, including domestic violence and stalking. Please take care while listening. In 2010, the CDC began conducting an ongoing survey, known as the National Intimate Partner and Sexual Violence Survey. The survey was designed to collect data and develop comprehensive statistics surrounding the issue of intimate partner violence, which can include physical, mental, or emotional abuse, sexual violence, and stalking. The survey was republished with improved data in 2017. Today, we'll be focusing specifically on stalking and its implications. Some of the behaviors that were measured when collecting data for this survey included unwanted phone calls, voicemails, or text messages, unwanted emails or social media messages, unwanted gifts, watching or following from a distance, spying with a device, unwanted appearances at the victim's home, work, or school, leaving threatening items for the victim to find, or breaking into the victim's personal property and intentionally leaving evidence behind to scare the victim. Almost all of these behaviors were perpetrated against Amy Harwick, whose story we'll be talking about today. The survey found that 1 in 6 women and 1 in 19 men had experienced some form of stalking in their lifetime. Around 6 in 10 women and 4 in 10 men were stalked by a current or former intimate partner. When looking at the prevalence of specific stalking behaviors, 75% of women who had been stalked reported receiving unwanted calls or messages. 68% of women had received threats of physical harm from their stalker. And 58% of women reported that their stalker had approached them or showed up, uninvited, to their home, work, or school. Stalking laws vary from state to state, and while victims can petition for protective orders against their abusers, the burden of proof lies squarely with the victim. And the required proof to obtain a protective order can also vary from state to state. Generally, victims must prove an instance of physical harm or prove that they are reasonably fearful that they are in imminent danger. Protective orders also do not last forever. They expire, which eventually requires a victim to file another petition, which can also mean having to face their abuser in court again. And it's important to note that protective orders are often violated. Sometimes a notarized piece of paper simply is not enough. Often, there are no real repercussions for the abuser or justice for the victim until it is far too late. 38-year-old Amy Harwick was a highly accomplished marriage and family therapist in Los Angeles, California, who counseled many of her clients about how to protect themselves and heal from abusive partners. But what many people didn't know about Amy is that for nearly a decade, she lived with the looming fear of a man whose obsession could not be swayed and who could not take no for an answer.
Hi, this is Dr. Amy Harwick. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist.
Born on May 20th, 1981, Amy Nicole Harwick was adopted as a child and grew up in Lansdale, Pennsylvania, a town of about 18,000 people just north of Philadelphia. She grew up with her brother Chris and graduated from North Penn High School in 1999. Amy was a bright, vibrant spirit and was known to be incredibly expressive and comfortable with exploring many different facets of her identity. Those who knew Amy, even as far back as high school, have consistently described her as one of the warmest, most loving, effervescent people they have ever known. In 2001, at 19 years old, Amy made the big move to Los Angeles, California. Originally, Amy moved to LA because at the time, she was married to a musician named Tommy, so she moved to LA with him. The relationship was rather short-lived, and the two ultimately divorced, but Amy fell in love with Los Angeles. And her vivacious and eclectic spirit fit right into the Hollywood lifestyle, so she decided to stay and continue her education there. Amy was ambitious and driven, and she found numerous ways to pay her way through college. She worked as a go-go dancer and bartender in various nightclubs, and even received professional training in fire performing. The Playboy Mansion actually hired Amy on a few occasions as both a waitress and a fire performer. Amy also discovered that she loved being in front of the camera, and this led to her finding work doing a lot of commercial modeling. She even did shoots for the likes of both Playboy and Maxim. There was also a period of time where Amy worked as a personal trainer. She even released a workout DVD called Fit to Rock. Amy was not the type of person you could put into a box. She was multi-talented, and she had such an innate desire to succeed that she was willing to do what she had to do to see it to fruition. From a young age, Amy was fascinated by the human psyche and knew that she wanted to work with people and delve into the inner workings of the human mind. Amy also held a deep interest in the macabre. She loved horror movies, studied true crime cases such as the Black Dahlia and the murder of Sharon Tate, and she owned quite a collection of taxidermy pieces. These interests, coupled with her fascination with human psychology, led to Amy's interest in becoming a forensic psychologist. But after exploring more about the field, she decided that it wasn't quite the right fit. From that point, because she knew she still wanted to work with and help people, Amy decided that she wanted to go into marriage and family therapy. She went on to earn a Bachelor of Arts in Psychology from California Polytechnic University in Pomona, and she then attended graduate school at Pepperdine University in Malibu, where she graduated and earned a Master of Arts in Clinical Psychology in 2012. Throughout all of her years in college, Amy continued working all of her side jobs, modeling, go-go dancing, and fire performing, to pay her way through school. As Amy grew in her education and career, she started to realize that there was a severe lack of sexuality education and training among marriage and family therapists. As Amy herself said, there was only one unit taught about sexuality while she was in college, which is surprising, considering sex and sexuality in general can be a prominent and ongoing issue in so many relationships and marriages, and a problem that therapists often encounter with their clients. This led to her working under the supervision of one of her good friends, Mo Goes, who was also an accomplished sex therapist. Amy worked for Mo Goes from April 2013 to May 2014. This internship really kicked off her career. Within just a couple of months, she had a full roster of clients. Her success in her practice continued, even after Mo moved away and Amy switched to a new supervisor. Amy was absolutely thriving. Over the years she'd lived in Los Angeles, she had made many connections and word about her practice made its rounds quickly, particularly with her specialty in sex therapy. Amy made it her mission to create a safe space for people to discuss and explore sexuality. She specialized in working with people who were part of heavily stigmatized communities, those in the kink and BDSM community, polyamorous people, and particularly sex workers. Amy even wrote a book called The New Sex Bible for Women, which was published in 2014. She decided to continue her studies by attending the Institute for Advanced Study of Human Sexuality, where she earned a doctorate of philosophy in 2016, and thus became Dr. Amy Harwick. Amy was incredibly passionate about helping people with mental health struggles and relationship obstacles surrounding sexuality. She sought to educate and empower women in their femininity and sexuality and even traveled to China on more than one occasion to give lectures and teach classes for women. Amy was finding so much success in her career, in fact, that she started making guest appearances on TV shows as a licensed marriage and family therapist. She appeared on Braxton Family Values, a reality show, in June 2016, the Netflix documentary Addicted to Sexting in September 2016, and MTV's True Life in an episode about body positivity in June 2017. Amy also started a YouTube channel in 2017, where she started posting videos offering advice about topics like surviving a breakup, coping with depression, and how BDSM can improve your relationship skills. By all accounts, Amy Harwick lived an adventurous and fulfilling life. But behind the scenes, Amy had been struggling for years with some of the very same things that she counseled her clients about. To understand Amy's tragic death, we have to go back several years to a time when she was still in graduate school and before she had her own therapy practice. Sometime in 2010, Amy met a man named Gareth Pursehouse. At the time, Amy was around 29 and Gareth would have been around 32 years old. And again, Amy was still in graduate school at this time and did not yet work as a therapist. Gareth was a software engineer slash IT specialist who also worked as a photographer on the side. He also attempted stand-up comedy, but that endeavor never really took off. There are differing accounts of how Amy and Gareth met. Some sources have said that they met while Amy was working as a go-go dancer at an event, and other sources have said that they met while Amy was working as a model and Gareth was working on the set as a photographer. It's not clear exactly how they met, but it seems that they met while Amy was working in some capacity. People who knew Gareth described him as charming and charismatic, but many people also noted that there was always something unusual about him. Despite being generally friendly, he was one of those people who would always try to one-up your stories or accomplishments. And from what I could gather, he just tried too hard to be likable, which actually just struck people as off-putting. But Amy and Gareth really liked each other, and they quickly started a relationship. According to those who knew Amy, the relationship seemed great in the beginning. But over time, Amy's friends started to notice changes in her, and they started noticing unsettling behaviors from Gareth. Friends have noted that Gareth quickly became possessive. In public settings, when there were other men around, he would often show overt affection toward Amy, which friends have said clearly made Amy uncomfortable. Within just a year, the relationship had turned violent. In June 2011, Amy filed for her first restraining order against Gareth. In her report, Amy alleged that on multiple occasions, Gareth, quote, choked me, suffocated me, pushed me against walls, kicked me, dropped me to the ground with force, force restrained me, slammed my head into the ground, and punched me with a closed fist, end quote. Amy wrote that as a result of this abuse, she suffered injuries such as, quote, a sore ankle, whiplash, bruises on her arms, a large bruise that lasted 3 weeks from a punch to her leg, a sore back, and a hurt knee, end quote. Unfortunately, this restraining order was never officially enacted against Gareth. Amy was required to attend a hearing in court for a judge to officially sign off on the restraining order, but she never showed up to the hearing. It's unclear why she opted not to attend, but it's highly likely that it was because she would have to face Gareth in court. Their relationship continued for a time after this, but in April 2012, Amy filed for another restraining order against Gareth. In this report, dated April 12, 2012, Amy alleged that, quote, an argument in the car progressed to him physically pulling me out of the car. I got a bloody nose from his roughness. He then took my suitcases and threw them overhead very far, damaging them, end quote. This incident ultimately left Amy stranded on the side of the freeway where Gareth left her. On another page of her report, Amy wrote that in March of 2012, Gareth broke into her apartment building and smashed 10 picture frames against the front door of her apartment, before texting her, quote, things will get worse, end quote. The next day, Gareth broke into her apartment building again and left 4 dozen roses taped to her front door. And the next day, he once again broke into her apartment building and waited outside of her front door, playing music before sending threatening emails to some of her friends. It appears that Amy and Gareth had broken up by March of 2012, at the time these incidents happened, and these incidents resulted from Gareth's anger and desperation surrounding the breakup. Amy and Gareth had dated for about a year and a half in total before Amy broke things off. This restraining order was officially filed against Gareth. In California, if there is no other expiration date specified, restraining orders automatically expire after 3 years. After obtaining the restraining order, all contact between Amy and Gareth seemed to stop, and Amy set her sights on moving forward with her life. Not long after removing Gareth from her life, Amy went on to graduate with her master's degree in clinical psychology from Pepperdine University. She soon ended up landing a job with the Department of Mental Health in California, where she would be working at a detention center for juvenile offenders. But before she could officially start her new job, she discovered that someone had sent private nude modeling photos to her new employer. This resulted in Amy losing the job opportunity. From the moment she found out, Amy suspected that Gareth had sent the photos. After losing that job opportunity, Amy accepted her friend Mo Goz's offer to come work under her supervision at her private practice. This is the internship that Amy held from April 2013 to May 2014 before launching her own highly successful therapy practice. And again, Amy went on to become a licensed marriage and family therapist and obtained a PhD from the Institute for Advanced Study of Human Sexuality. It seemed that Amy was finally free of Gareth, and according to her friends, she rarely ever talked about him. The restraining order against Gareth expired on April 11, 2015. It's unclear why Amy opted not to file for another restraining order, but it's likely that either, one, she hadn't heard from Gareth in 3 years and didn't feel that she was in danger, and or two, she did not want to have to face Gareth in court again. Sometime in 2015, after the restraining order expired, Amy traveled to China to teach classes for women about empowerment and sexuality. Again, her career was already thriving at this point. When Amy returned home to California, she found that something was wrong with her computer, and she was missing some photo albums that she had kept from some of her modeling work. When she called her best friend, Robert Koshland, over to her home to inspect her computer, he discovered that it appeared someone had completely wiped it. Clearly, someone had broken into her home, destroyed her computer, and stolen her photos. Amy immediately suspected that the perpetrator was Gareth. Suddenly, her worst nightmare was starting all over again. After the break-in, it seems that Amy didn't experience any further incidents that may have been orchestrated by Gareth. She once again moved on and went about life as normal, but Gareth was always lurking in the back of her mind. Time went on, and sometime in 2017, Amy was attending a party of some sort in Los Angeles when she met none other than actor and host of The Price is Right, Drew Carey. Amy and Drew felt an instant connection and were both somewhat smitten with each other pretty early on. Just 1 week after meeting for the first time, Drew took Amy to Disneyland as a late birthday present. A week later, Drew invited Amy to Disneyland again, and this time he asked her to get some of her best friends together, and he would pay for them all to go join in the fun too. According to Amy's best friend, Robert Koshland, everyone had a fantastic time, and while he was walking with Drew at the park, Drew told him that he thought he might marry Amy. By all accounts, Amy and Drew had a healthy, loving, fun relationship. However, Amy did face some personal obstacles with the notoriety and sometimes negative attention that came with dating someone as famous as Drew Carey. When rumors of the romance started to make rounds, Amy experienced a barrage of negative comments online. Some of these comments were malicious, false rumors made up about Amy, aimed at tarnishing her reputation, which Amy believed had originated from a former friend of hers. Despite the vitriol from online trolls, Amy and Drew took their relationship to the next step. Sometime in late 2017 or early 2018, Drew proposed to Amy, reportedly in Paris, France. On the Valentine's Day episode of The Price is Right in 2018, Drew walked out on stage holding Amy's hand and proudly announced her as his fiancée, giving her a kiss on the cheek while she smiled and waved to the audience. Months passed, and though most who knew Amy say that she and Drew were incredibly happy and in love, Amy was still struggling with the level of attention that came with being engaged to someone in the public eye. At some point during the relationship, Amy and Drew tried going to couples therapy to work through those obstacles. But in November 2018, less than a year after getting engaged, Amy and Drew called it off. Friends of both of them have said that though the breakup was amicable, they were both upset and distraught over it because they did love each other deeply. But as Amy's friends have said, she was never one to look back. She was always moving forward. Her career was continuing to blossom. Amy spent much of 2019 appearing on numerous podcasts as a guest, appearing on broadcasts such as Good Morning La La Land, and guest lecturing at her alma mater, Pepperdine University. She was also doing a lot of work with Pineapple Support, an organization that offers free and subsidized mental health care for people in the adult industry. Amy also created an online group called Foxy Feminists, where women in Los Angeles could connect with each other for business, to make friends, or just to seek inspiration or guidance. Amy was an incredibly busy woman, and from what I've learned about her, I can imagine that she wouldn't want it any other way. On January 16, 2020, Amy attended the XBiz Awards in downtown Los Angeles, which is a conference and award show for the adult industry. Amy was attending with her good friend and fellow therapist, Hernando Chavez, and she was ecstatic to be there. She was actually scheduled to speak on a panel about mental health on behalf of Pineapple Support. When Amy and Hernando arrived, they made their way to the line waiting to walk the red carpet and get their photos taken. While standing in line, Hernando introduced Amy to a friend of his before he left the line briefly to go to the bar for drinks. While Hernando was gone, Amy stayed in line and talked with this new friend. They had only been talking for a couple of minutes when a man approached them and started loudly and aggressively accusing Amy of being a hypocrite and asking her why she was at the event. That man was Gareth Pursehouse, who was apparently working the event as a photographer. Amy had not seen Gareth or even spoken to him in more than 8 years at that point. According to the friend who was standing there, Gareth was calling Amy names and at one point even said, quote, "You ruined my life, bitch," end quote. Bear in mind that this was happening at a red carpet event for an award show. There were dozens, if not hundreds, of people in the immediate vicinity who could see and hear this all happening. It's also important to note that, according to people who were there, security personnel did not even attempt to intervene at any point during this interaction. Amy felt afraid and uncomfortable, and she was certainly feeling a level of embarrassment for the scene her ex-boyfriend was causing. So she took it upon herself, being the empathetic person that she was, to try to de-escalate the situation. She asked Gareth if they could step aside and talk privately rather than shouting and making a scene. They moved away from the line and sat on a bench to talk. When Hernando returned from the bar, he could see Amy and Gareth talking privately, and he said that Gareth appeared, from a short distance, to be visibly distraught and upset. He was waving his hands around, and his manner of speaking was very animated and somewhat aggressive. In contrast, according to Hernando, Amy was sitting with her hands clasped in her lap, calm and collected, as she listened to her abusive ex-boyfriend accuse her of ruining his life and express his disturbing obsession with her. Amy and Gareth talked for about 45 minutes before Hernando decided it was time to intervene. He approached them and told Amy that the red carpet was about to close and that she should come back to the line if she wanted to get her photos taken. So Amy wrapped up the conversation with Gareth and made her way back to the red carpet. Amy posed on the red carpet for a few minutes, wearing a beautiful knee-length black gown, her hair styled into long waves and accented with a delicate pearl headband. It's clear in those photos that while she does exude her normal confidence and poise, there is something about her body language and facial expressions that give away just how uncomfortable and anxious she was feeling after the incident with Gareth. After the red carpet, Amy and Hernando made their way into the event and found their table. While Amy was thrilled to be at the event upon arriving, by then she had become withdrawn and distracted. Hernando described her demeanor as, quote, "stoic, almost like a ghost," end quote. She and Hernando thought the ordeal with Gareth was over, but toward the end of the show, Gareth approached Amy's table and knelt down beside her to say something only she could hear. After that, Amy left the table to once again go somewhere to talk with Gareth privately. Amy made sure to talk somewhere there would be a lot of foot traffic, for her own safety. Hernando soon came outside as well and watched their conversation from a distance. Once again, according to Hernando, Gareth seemed upset, and Amy seemed afraid, but she maintained her composure. After talking for about 30 minutes, Amy once again wrapped things up with Gareth, hoping it was for good this time. She and Hernando then left the event and went to a diner out of the city. When Amy returned home after the event, she sat down and wrote an email to herself to document what had happened that night. The email is dated January 17, 2020, at 3:09 a.m., just a few hours after the Expos award show. In the email, Amy wrote, quote, "Tonight I felt very scared. I went to the award show with Hernando. When we arrived, we waited in a very long line to do the red carpet. As we were waiting, I saw Gareth walk by with a camera. Clearly he was working. I decided to ignore him and just not look in that direction. I thought maybe he would not notice me," end quote. She continued, writing, quote, "We sat close by the bathrooms. I made sure to look and made sure there were both security people and a lot of attendees very close by. He was sobbing, his head was in his hands. He was hyperventilating. He was distorting his face up and shaking violently. I was scared and felt like I needed to neutralize the situation. I didn't think he was going to attack me in that moment, but this clearly showed me how obsessed he was. He told me that he thinks about me every day and every day he cries. He told me he lost his job when we broke up because he couldn't work. He told me that no matter what he did, he couldn't stop obsessing over me. He told me that I was a cheater and a liar because he thought we were still together when I believed we were broken up. He recited text messages that I had sent from this time frame, about 9 years ago. He recited the date, who they were to, and exactly what was said word for word. I couldn't believe it. I was very scared. He said he thinks about me constantly and that he can't watch the TV shows that we watched together, hear the songs that we liked, or the names that we called each other, or even smell vanilla or he has panic attacks. I sat with him for about 20 minutes or so. In my mind, I wanted to neutralize the situation. I know he was behind a lot of the stalking and terrible things that have happened in my life for so long. End quote. She went on to describe the second time she had talked with Garrett that night, writing, quote, toward the end of the award show, I sat with him off to the side again as he cried and shook, but he was also able to sit up straight and have more of a conversation. We were able to clarify some things. I told him that I knew it was him that broke into my apartment and stole all of my photos. I told him that he could send them back to me if he would like. He denied doing so, but I don't believe him. I told him that I forgive him for all of the things that he had done to me after the breakup. He just couldn't stop crying, couldn't stop hyperventilating. Have a moment of clarity and then just start breaking down. He admitted hacking into all of my devices. He said he wakes up every day and cries on the floor. He said every day he wishes I was in his life. End quote. The rest of the email has not been made public to my knowledge. But there it is. Amy, in her own words, recalling exactly what happened that night, when the haunting shadow in the back of her mind manifested back into her reality. On January 17, 2020, at 11:51 a.m., only a few hours after Amy wrote that email to herself, Gareth texted her, saying, quote, I internetted your number. Recognize it now that I see it, end quote. Followed by, quote, if I'm allowed to text, end quote. He, completely uninvited, found her number online and was continuing to harass her. Amy ended up responding to Gareth's message, but only to try to set a very clear boundary. She replied, quote, I think it was really good that we were able to speak last night. I'm sure there's a lot more that you want to process and say to me, but I think that was a lot for both of us. I hope you were able to hear me last night when I said that I was sorry for anything that caused you suffering, and that I forgive you for the things that you did to me. I think right now it's best to have some space, and I don't mean that in a negative way. The past is sad and triggering for both of us. I think we ended our talk last night well. We can be civil from a distance, respect each other, and move forward with our own lives. End quote. Shortly after sending that text to Gareth, Amy texted some of her close friends, telling them that Gareth had found her phone number and that she tried to set a boundary with him. She also expressed to friends that she felt unsafe. In one text, Amy said, quote, handyman comes tomorrow for more locks on my windows, and I ordered pepper spray, end quote. That day, Amy started sharing her location with her best friend Robert, and told him that if anything ever happened to her, it was Gareth. Gareth texted her a few more times that day, still expressing his obsessive delusions, but Amy ignored him. The next day, January 18th, 2020, Gareth left Amy a voicemail in which he's crying and pleading with her to let him say the things he needs to say. At that point, Amy blocked his number. And as far as we know, there was no further direct contact between Amy and Gareth after that. A month passed, and though Amy was still feeling rattled and afraid after what happened with Gareth, she was not one to cower in fear. She continued on with her life, enjoying outings with her friends and continuing to thrive in her career. On February 14, 2020, Amy started her day with a sunrise hike with one of her friends. They traversed the Hollywood Hills, Amy stopping to point out her favorite landmarks and share their history with her friend. She even donned a red cardigan in honor of Valentine's Day. Later that day, around 7 p.m., Amy left her home to attend a Valentine's Day burlesque show with friends at the Globe Theater. One of the performers in the show was Amy's good friend, known as Miss Tosh. According to Miss Tosh, Amy and her friends had a blast at the show. They sat in the front row, cheering on their friend until the show ended around 9 p.m. Amy donned a pink velvet dress and leather jacket, with knee-high boots and her hair pulled into a neat high bun. Around her neck, she wore a long beaded rosary necklace. Miss Tosh invited Amy to attend the after-party with her, but Amy declined as she already had plans to go with her other friends to have tea at the Nomad Hotel, which is now under a different name. After having tea with her friends, Amy made the drive back home, pulling into her driveway around 1 a.m. on February 15, 2020. When she arrived home, Amy quickly texted one of her friends at 1:02 a.m., asking her to send over some pictures they had taken together at the Nomad. She then made her way into her home, ready to settle in for the night. At 1:11 a.m., just 9 minutes after she sent that text message, Amy's roommate, Michael, called 911 from a neighbor's phone. When police still had not arrived several minutes later, Michael called 911 again at 1:18 a.m., panicked and frustrated by the delayed response. Just before 1:30 a.m. on February 15, 2020, LAPD officers finally arrived at Amy's home on Mound Street, greeted by her roommate Michael, wearing a shirt that had visible bloodstains near his stomach. Michael was frantic, still trying to catch his breath as he attempted to explain what he heard before he called 911. According to Michael, a few hours earlier, around 9 p.m., he heard what he described as a dish crashing to the floor and shattering. At the time, he was in bed asleep, and the sound woke him up. Michael lived on the bottom floor of the home, while Amy's bedroom was on the third floor. He assumed the sound was Amy coming home and accidentally dropping a dish on the floor. Thinking nothing of it, he went back to sleep. Michael told police that just after 1 a.m., he was awoken again by the sounds of a struggle, of bodies falling to the floor, followed by what he has described as a blood-curdling scream. At that point, Michael said he jumped out of bed, shouting, quote, "Leave her alone, motherfucker," end quote, before running out of the house to try to see what was going on. Panicked, Michael realized that when he ran out of the house, he'd left behind both his phone and his key somewhere in his bedroom, meaning that he could not unlock the wrought iron gate at the front of the property. He had to climb the gate, which resulted in a cut on his stomach, and that explained the ripped bloody shirt he was wearing. Ring camera footage on the neighbor's house actually captured Michael at 1:08 a.m., scaling the wrought iron gate and running up to the neighbor's door, frantically knocking and asking for help. When no one answered, Michael ran to another neighbor's house, but again he was met with silence. Someone happened to be walking down the street at that moment, and they allowed Michael to borrow their phone. That was when he called 911 the first time, at 1:11 a.m. After explaining all of that to the officers, Michael then explained that he did not have his key with him, as he'd run out of the house in a panic, and he now could not get back into the house without scaling the wrought iron gate again. The officers requested additional units before scaling the gate and entering the property. Michael led officers around the corner of the house to the back courtyard, where he was met with a devastating sight. Amy lay face down on the patio, 20 feet below her third floor bedroom balcony. She was struggling to breathe, bleeding from her mouth and nose, and still wearing the pink velvet dress and boots she had worn to the burlesque show just hours earlier. Officers immediately requested an ambulance upon discovering Amy, and while they waited for paramedics to arrive, they proceeded to search the house. By this point, additional officers had arrived, and one officer remained with Michael and Amy outside, while the others cleared the house to ensure that whoever had done this was not still inside. Once inside the house, officers noticed that the French doors leading into the living room had been broken into, and a door in the kitchen that led outside was left open. Nothing else about the home appeared to be in disarray. There were no broken pieces of furniture, nothing strewn about or ransacked. Making their way upstairs, officers found what appeared to be a semi-dried puddle of urine outside of one of the bathrooms. In Amy's bedroom on the third floor of the house, they found her purse sitting on the floor, still closed and containing all of its contents. The door to her bedroom balcony was open, and on the balcony was a capped syringe containing a dark brown liquid that officers initially believed to be a drug of some sort, likely heroin. In the media room next to Amy's bedroom was a crumpled leather jacket on the floor, and behind the door of the media room, officers found a broken rosary necklace, the beads scattered across the floor and trailing out into the hallway. At this point, while officers were searching the house, Amy was still lying outside on the patio, fighting for her life. She had presumably been laying there on the brink of death for 30 to 40 minutes. Finally, at 1:43 a.m., about 11 minutes after officers requested an ambulance, firefighters and paramedics arrived on scene. For some reason or another, only fire rescue was dispatched to the scene, not an ambulance. Luckily, however, at least one of the firefighters who responded was also a trained paramedic. Amy still had a pulse at this point. It was weak and thready, but it was there. Paramedics turned Amy over onto her back and cut off the pink velvet dress she was wearing. It was then that they realized the extent of her injuries. According to one of the paramedics on scene, Amy's abdomen was soft where it should have been rigid, indicating that she had several broken ribs. They also believed that her pelvis had been shattered. After turning her over, they were also able to see the strangulation marks around her neck, and the defensive wounds on her hands were clearly visible. Amy was quickly transported to the trauma center at Cedar Hospital, but she was not able to fight any longer. 38-year-old Amy Harwick was pronounced dead at 3:26 a.m. on February 15, 2020. Within hours of Amy's death, police spoke with several of her closest friends, including Robert Koshland. When asked if he knew anyone who would want to hurt Amy, Robert immediately told police that he believed Gareth Pursehouse could have been responsible for her death. Though Amy never spoke much about her history with Gareth, many of her friends knew about the abuse that she suffered and the subsequent restraining order she obtained when she broke things off with him. Again, before the incident at the X-Biz Awards in January 2020, Amy hadn't seen or spoken to Gareth in almost 9 years. After learning about the history of Amy's former relationship with Gareth and the encounter at the awards show just 1 month prior to her murder, police moved Gareth to the top of their suspect list. 41-year-old Gareth Pursehouse was arrested just before 5 p.m. on February 15, 2020, 13 hours after Amy died at the hospital. He was charged with one count of first-degree residential burglary and one count of murder with the special circumstance of lying in wait. This launched an investigation that uncovered an act of pure malice and painted a harrowing picture of the battle that Amy fought for her life. For reasons unknown, Gareth was actually released from jail on February 18, 2020, on a $2 million bond. But the next day, he was found near LAX Airport and taken back into custody on February 19th, this time with no chance of release. Gareth had a multitude of cuts, scrapes, and bruises on his body when he was first arrested. He had a bruise under his right eye, a large bruise and wound on his left arm, and various cuts and scrapes on his legs. When investigators searched Gareth's home, they found syringes identical to the one found on Amy's balcony the night of her murder. Back at Amy's home, investigators were uncovering more damning evidence against Gareth. Small smears of blood found on the French doors in Amy's home, and a small blood stain just inside the doors, were later found to be a match to Gareth. Amy's autopsy revealed further details about exactly what she suffered and how hard she fought that night. There was evidence of petechiae in Amy's eyes. Coupled with the marks around her neck, as well as the fact that her hyoid bone was broken, this was clearly indicative of manual strangulation. Amy had a number of other injuries throughout her body, including cuts on her forehead, cheeks, and ears, as well as various bruises and scrapes to her cheeks and nose. She also suffered severe damage to her brain and liver as a result of the fall. And, as first responders initially believed, her pelvis was shattered. The cuts and bruises on Amy's hands and forearms were indicative of an attack, during which she was trying desperately to defend herself. Perhaps some of the most damning evidence of all, DNA scraped from underneath Amy's fingernails, later turned out to be a match to Gareth Pursehouse. The syringe found on Amy's balcony containing a dark brown liquid was not heroin, as LAPD officers initially thought. It was instead determined to be highly concentrated nicotine, which, if injected, would have been fatal by itself. There was no indication that Amy had been injected, considering the syringe was still capped, and there were no reports of nicotine being found in her system. Amy Harwick's official cause of death was determined to be manual strangulation, as well as blunt force injuries as a result of a fall. Manner of death, homicide. But the road to justice would not be swift. Just 1 month after Amy's murder, the entire world was rocked by COVID-19. Every aspect of daily life began to change, and within weeks, it seemed that the world was shuttered within the four walls of their homes, and time seemed to stop. This extended into the justice system. Court hearings were delayed or postponed indefinitely for fear of spreading the virus. And it would be some time yet before Zoom would become an essential tool in modern society. And with that, Amy's case, along with countless others, was put on pause. But finally, in September 2021, a year and a half after Amy's murder. A preliminary hearing was held during which Gareth Pursehouse pleaded not guilty to the charges of first-degree residential burglary and murder with the special circumstance of lying in wait. For two more years, there was no progress in Amy's case. And then, on August 29th, 2023, 3.5 years after Amy Harwick's life was stolen from her, opening statements began. It was at that point that so much of the evidence that I've already discussed finally came to light. The email that Amy wrote to herself after her frightening encounter with Gareth. The desperate and unhinged text messages Gareth sent to her in the aftermath. Amy's effort to reinforce her sense of safety and security in her own home. The damning DNA evidence found under her fingernails after she fought for her life. And possibly some of the most unsettling evidence in this case. Ring camera footage from a neighbor's house that appeared to capture Gareth Pursehouse making his way into Amy's home on the night of her murder. The neighbors directly next to Amy's home had just installed 3 Ring cameras only 1 week before her murder. One Ring camera captured Gareth at 8:52 p.m. on February 14, 2020, walking across the neighbor's porch and attempting to cover the camera, while Amy was at the Globe Theater watching a burlesque show with her friends. And at 1:11 a.m. on February 15, 2020, the same exact moment that Amy's roommate, Michael, was on the phone with 911, Ring camera captured Gareth fleeing the scene, scaling a fence and falling to his knees before running away. Based on this Ring camera footage, investigators determined that Gareth had broken into Amy's home just before 9 p.m. on Valentine's Day, 2020, while she was out with friends. The sound that Michael had initially thought was a dish falling to the floor and shattering was actually the sound of an abusive, delusional stalker breaking into the home of an ex-girlfriend who hadn't had contact with him in nearly a decade. Gareth was lurking in her home, waiting to attack her, for 4 hours. Amy didn't even have time to change out of her clothes, barely had time to take her purse off of her shoulder when she was ambushed. She was so frightened and unprepared that there was a puddle of urine outside of her bathroom door. Throughout the entirety of the 13-day trial, Gareth spent the vast majority of the time sitting unfazed, his eyes trained downward at the table as detectives, first responders, forensic experts, and Amy's traumatized and grieving friends delivered their testimony. Notably, however, he appeared to become more interested when the coroner took the stand, turning his eyes upward to watch as graphic photos of Amy's injuries were shown to the jury. The defense hinged their argument on Gareth's mental state at the time of the murder, emphasizing his depression and desperation that a woman he loved had scorned him and made him feel less than. They argued that, while yes, Gareth was at Amy's home the night of the murder, he had only gone there to talk to her, to express his feelings and convey how downtrodden and lost he had felt since their breakup nearly a decade earlier, that the conversation turned into an altercation, during which Amy had jumped from the third-story balcony to escape. Gareth Pursehouse broke into Amy Harwick's home, armed with a lethal dose of nicotine, after being told by Amy herself that she wanted him to stay away from her. Amy's body bore the trauma and the wounds of a woman desperately and courageously trying to fight off a predator. Gareth's anger simmered for almost a decade. He lurked in the shadows and left remnants of his wrath exactly where he knew it would frighten Amy the most. He hacked into her devices, tried to sabotage her friendships, broke into her home, and tried to destroy her career before it even began. All part of an abuser's formulaic method of instilling ever-present fear in their victims, and reminding them that no matter where they went or what they did, they would be waiting. When he encountered Amy at the XBIZ Awards, his rage reached a boiling point, and it has been widely speculated that Gareth had been stalking Amy's every move for years, that he knew she would be at that event, that he intentionally secured a job working as a photographer for the event, because he had contained his anger for so long that he could not anymore. And this event provided him the opportunity to strike that he had waited so long for. And the jury agreed that Amy's murder was not a conversation gone wrong. Amy's murder was a calculated ambush perpetrated by a man who could not even fathom taking no for an answer. On September 27th, 2023, after 12 days of testimony and 8 hours of deliberation, a jury found Gareth Pursehouse guilty on one count of first-degree residential burglary and one count of murder. 3.5 years after Amy Harwick's vibrant, eclectic, compassionate spirit was ripped away from the world. In the wake of this tragedy, friends of Amy started a petition calling for drastic change to laws surrounding victims of domestic violence and stalking. This petition is still open and currently stands at 319,000 signatures. I will link the petition in the show notes. Amy expressed before her death that when the time came, she wanted to have an elaborate headstone placed on her grave. Unfortunately, the cemetery where Amy was laid to rest does not allow headstones. Because of that, Amy's best friend, Robert Koshland, has been working on a fundraiser to build a bronze statue of Amy to be placed in Los Angeles as a tribute to both Amy and to survivors of domestic violence. Robert also wanted a place for Amy's many, many friends and loved ones in Los Angeles to be able to visit, to remember and honor her. I will also link that GoFundMe in the show notes. If you or someone you know has experienced stalking or intimate partner violence, please contact the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 1-800-799-7233 or find help on their website by chatting online at thehotline.org. If you or someone you know has experienced sexual violence, please contact RAIN at 800-656-4673 or visit their website at rain.org. You may also call the Victim Connect Resource Center at 1-855-484-2846 or find help by chatting online at victimconnect.org. For more information and other resources for victims of stalking, please visit the Stalking Prevention Awareness and Resource Center's website at stalkingawareness.org. I don't want to end this talking about the way that Amy left this world. I want to remind you of the way she lived, of who she was. Amy Harwick was a brilliant, vivacious, successful woman whose compassion and capacity for inspiration cannot be matched. She sought to heal others, to break stigmas, to empower women, and to help people to realize that they are whole and worthy. She taught people to embrace their identity, their sexuality, their mental health. She made it her mission to create a safe, welcoming space for people to share and overcome that which they struggled with most, and to share her knowledge and insight with the world. She was a fascinating person who I am certain that anyone would have been lucky to know, and her story deserves to be told. Amy Harwick left her mark on the world, and the world surely mourns her loss.
This is Dr. Amy Harwick. Until next time, have a great day.
If you'd like to request a case to be covered on the show, you'll find a link to a case request form in the show notes. Please subscribe to the YouTube channel, where you'll find full episodes, complete with photos relevant to each case. You can follow the podcast on X, formerly Twitter, at Crime Again Pod, on Instagram at Crime Again Podcast, and on TikTok at Crime Again Podcast. Links to all social media can be found in the show notes. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you in the next episode of Crime and Crime Again.